hvis du tror, at hackerens våben er computeren, så tror vi det. Det er lige så ofte en dåse med luft, en gammel cykel eller en hammer. Du lytter til Tech Talk. Jeg hedder Lars Benetsen. For de fleste af os er en hacker en person, der sidder alene foran sin computer, mens han ivrigt angriber tasterne for at udføre sit angreb mod en virksomhed. Eller for at udvikle sin nyeste malware. Men sandheden kunne ikke være længere væk. Den moderne hacker arbejder i Teams, han researcher sine ofte længere og grundigt, og han holder sig ikke tilbage fra at begå fysisk indbrud, hvis det hjælper ham med at få den information, han leder efter. For nylig så afholdt en af verdens største sikkerhedsproducenter, F-Secure, en sikkerhedsevent i London, og her fik jeg mulighed for at snakke med den etiske hacker, Tom van der Wiege, der er en del af F-Secures konsulentgruppe Red Team. Disse hacker hjælper virksomheder til at forstå IT-sikkerhed bedre, og det gør de ved at bryde ind i virksomheden, på bestilling naturligvis, og altid inden for lovens rammer. Du lytter til Tech Talk episode 16, optaget live on tape den 1. juni 2018. Jeg hedder Lars Benetsen, og til sidst i denne podcast beskriver Tom van der Wiege, hvordan hans team udfører et hackerangreb mod en virksomhed. Hæng på. Men inden Tom får lov til at fortælle om, hvordan han og hans team bryder ind i en virksomhed og finder kritisk information, så skal vi lige høre lidt om, hvordan sådan en hackerteam er bygget op.
So we have to be able to test different companies and organizations in different business sectors. That means we have a very, very specialized team. That means we have people specializing in social engineering. We have, my favorite term, amateur locksmiths who have taught themselves on how to open locks. We have people who do Windows security, who do access control security, embedded systems, you name it. Any kind of profile that we can use to put together a crack team to be able to help companies into protecting themselves against organized crime, against the opportunistic attacker, anyone who wants to perform any of the worst case scenarios for our customers.
Så hackeren er ikke længere den ensomme ulv, der sidder hjemme i kælderen bevæbnet med en laptop. I dag skal hackeren også være låsesmed og meget mere. Og når først de kommer ind, hvad er det så, de går efter?
These worst case scenarios could be, for example, getting a copy of the customer database. It could be stealing intellectual property. It could be reading off the values stuck in an envelope that someone put on top of the mainframe in a data center somewhere. It could be putting a nice sticker underneath the boardroom table of a big company because certain important things are being said in the boardroom, I've been told. So all of these things are targets for us.
Så målene er altså ikke altid noget, der ligger på en computer. Nogle gange skal hackeren bare ind og lytte til, hvad der sker i bestyrelsens mødelokale. Og hvilken virksomhed har råd til at få hemmeligheder lægget for de møder, hvor virksomhedens strategi eller økonomiske situation bliver drøftet. Men ønsket om at få informationer ud er ikke det samme som at hackeren får dem. Vel? Forkert. Hackeren vinder altid, fortæller Tom van der Wiege.
Well, it works because organizations are not as oiled machine as they would like you to believe. Companies have departments. They have outsourced service suppliers. They have the cloud. They have departments. They have politics. They have all kinds of stuff that we are going to abuse. Because here's a small spoiler alert. Departments don't always talk to each other when it comes to security. The thing is that we as attackers do not have to care about your structure. We couldn't care less who is responsible for the operating systems and the application stacks and the cloud services and the purchases of the office furniture and whatever it is. For us, it's just one company, and by the time the companies have figured out what department you're supposed to knock on the door of, we were long gone with your customer database and your intellectual property and access to your data center.
Og samtidig så vil hackeren forsøge at skaffe sig adgang på alle mulige måder. En af dem er at forsøge at skaffe sig adgang via en medarbejders mobiltelefon.
The more popular one is for example this one. You go to the some kind of telecom shop. You say hello Vodafone person, it's kind of embarrassing. I dropped my phone in the toilet. Can you give me a new SIM card? And they give you a new SIM card. Maybe with some other social engineering around it. And then you're sitting on the couch and all of a sudden your phone goes dead. That's fine. I'll check it tomorrow. But meanwhile, the criminal is, you know, resetting all your passwords and clicking on all the send my verification code over SMS functionalities of all the web services that you're using. And now they're in.
Så hvordan arbejder hackeren så? Og kan du slet ikke beskytte dig mod et angreb? Tom van der Wiege fortæller lidt mere om det om lidt, og derefter kommer han med et eksempel på, hvordan de har arbejdet for en tænkt kunde. Så lad nu være med at tro, at hackeren kun går efter din virtuelle indgangsvej til virksomheden. Som Tom van der Wiege siger, så er hackeren ligeglad med, hvordan han kommer ind.
Any kind of interaction that your organization or company has with the outside world is attack surface tools.
Og inden vi går over til Toms hacker-eksempel, så skal vi lige høre, hvad du kan gøre for at gøre livet lidt mere besværligt for hackeren. For at forhindre, at han kommer ind, det er ikke en mulighed.
What we're trying to do is not to protect ourselves from hackers, because forget it. What we can do is to raise the cost of attack. So that an attacker goes to a bank and goes, "Phew, geez, this is way too hard. Let's take the next one." Until they get in. And you want to make sure that it's as hard for them as possible.
Og så har Tom lige en bøn til IT-afdelingerne. Hvis du mistænker et angreb, så lad være med at rode med serveren. Du gør kun problemet værre.
So we have phone calls that we get saying, "Yeah, Bob logged onto the server because we thought it was an incident. He checked the entire server, but couldn't find anything. Can you guys come and take a look?" Like, yeah, you can thank Bob for destroying all the evidence. Because whatever is on that server is now gone.
Og så er vi næsten klar med hacker-eksemplet. Men inden vi kommer så langt, så får Tom lige lov til at fortælle, hvordan han og hans team af hackere gør sig klar til et hackerangreb.
Well, we're first going to do an ungodly amount of information gathering. We are going to know the company better than yourself. That means your competitors, your IT service providers, your cloud providers, anything. Who picks up the garbage? Who brings the coffee? Who brings the fruit every day? The cleaning company, you name it. And using very stupid little things, we can gain access to the company. We then, using that information, we make plausible scenarios with which we can divulge even more information from your employees, or actually give us access. Again, a ladder is usually how we get into buildings, where you tell the receptionist, "Could you please open the gate? I'm holding a ladder." And they let you in. Because they saw the exact same guy half an hour before. But what you didn't know, that guy was leaving the premises. We looked at what he was wearing. We have the same t-shirts with stuff on it. Because, you know, if you look at our hands, it's the only thing you need to do to find out that we're ethical hackers. I mean, we don't actually use tools. If our t-shirts are dirty, it's not because we've been breaking out ceilings, it's just flour, because we want to look like the actual guys, right? But she lets us in, because we looked apart. We're going to exploit as many situations as possible. Sometimes we're just using our worker clothes, you know, with these trousers with a million pockets in them. You just step into an office that you thought was empty, and all of a sudden the voice says, "Hey, are you the guy for the curtains?" And you kind of, you know, you get startled. You say, "Yes, I am here for the curtains." Which is great. Can you start? Like, I need to go back to my car to get the curtains. What was I supposed to do again? I'm new. And then she actually shows you the email, and I'm like photographing all the stuff and looking at what she's using, software, all that kind of stuff. So every bit helps for these kinds of situations. We then do post-exploitation, which means we need to dig ourselves into the network or the building, not literally, to make sure that we don't have to do the initial investment again of trying to get in, because that's the hard part. And then we need to find the data and get it up, which is sometimes also interesting. And we do this over a period of about 3 months. Not full time, but we want to make sure that the attack is as realistic as possible. So calling up people, emailing, all kinds of other stuff. So as far as the activities versus the time spent, most of the time goes to open source intelligence. Okay. Social engineering, premises breach, all that, but most of it is the information gathering part.
Og så er vi klar. De næste 36 minutter kan du høre, hvordan Tom van der Wiege beskriver et hackerangreb på en virksomhed. Operation Money Grab. Opgaven var at komme ind i en virksomhed og overføre et bestemt beløb, og her fik hackerne virkelig brug for alle deres evner. Lyt godt med, for undervejs kommer Tom med nogle gode pointer. Han fortæller blandt andet om, hvor let det er at åbne en dør, der har bevægelsesføler på den anden side af der, hvor du står. Han fortæller om, hvordan hackeren kan aflytte alt din wifi-trafik, og at I ikke er for gode til at smadre en rode for at komme ind. Og vidste du, at den største kilde til informationer, som hackeren har let adgang til, er skraldespanden? Det overraskede mig, og det samme gjorde tricket med at sende en pakke til en person, der er på ferie. Ind i pakken ligger der en... Nå ja, det må du hellere selv høre. Tom van der Vige arbejder for resten i København, så hvis du render rundt med dit adgangskort frit fremme, så kan du næsten være sikker på, at han før eller siden fotograferer det og smider det på Twitter, når I altså har snakket sammen.
I've kind of devised a bit of a story, which is kind of a few projects kind of mashed together, because else you maybe be able to figure out the customer, and we're not really interested in that. So the job is this, Operation Money Grab. Yes, we call them as we see them. It is an international manufacturer of electronic goods that we have to get into. Fantastic. Their physical location is in 3 buildings on a campus of some sort. And they use a certain application, they told us. Again, I cannot tell you the application because that would give away the customer. So, what do we have to do? We have to gain access to the building, physically. We have to gain access to the right department, which is the financial department. We have to access that application, and we have to transfer money. Now the customer says, could you please transfer 5,001 euros, please, from account X, Y? And we're like, yeah, that's fine, but why 5,001? Why not 5,000? And the customer just smiles, which is fine. Creepy, but fine. And then we have to gain privileges and persistence on the network. Good. So, we have 3 buildings. This is a mock-up in Photoshop. Don't put your machine learning on this. You're not going to get anywhere, right? So it's 3 buildings, 1 campus. So we have to figure out what access control system are they using. When do the guards come? What are they using for garbage disposal? Stuff like that. That means open source intelligence gathering. We're going to go to the city and we're going to buy the blueprints, which you can do in most European cities. For a few euros, they will give you the architectural maps, and not only will that show us the entrances, exits, stuff like that. Do you have a courtyard? Is there a garden? Maybe that's not, you know, apparent from the outside. Not even Google Maps has that information. But also it allows us to challenge our customer, because our customers sometimes are not on top of their own stuff. So the building that we're supposed to break into, does the customer actually own that building? If not, you're breaking the law, because we're making a contract with them, not their neighbors. So that helps. We're going to steal the garbage, which is usually what the juniors get. That's how you start on your team. Anything that's not purple yogurt or hairy bananas is going to be of use to us. Gossip, mail headers, signatures, stuff like that. Coming across an email that says, ha, after 7 months of having the service ticket open, we finally got it through. Congratulations for all of you. And then we just call up that person. Hello, I'm the database administrator. Yeah, that one transaction of type 123, That didn't go through, and the person just starts dying on the other end of the line. Like, you have no idea how long we've been working on this. Like, I mean, but it's not going through. It's some kind of 4i principle, because it's been, you know, it's been lasting for so long. So I just need to verify that your password starts with a P. It does not start with a P. Can you just give me your password so we can just get this forward to give me the password? We're done. Stupid? Yes. Does it work? Oh, yes. That's how it is. Maybe we find what kind of brand of printer you have. Maybe we can look at, you know, you have a Canon printer, whatever. And then we call up, we ask one of our colleagues with a nice warm female voice to call up the IT manager saying, yeah, there's been this security fix for Canon printers. It kind of happened in the factory, so, you know, it's kind of on us. When can we send the guy? And the next day, one of our colleagues shows up saying, hello, I'm here for the printer. And they leave you alone. They say, here's the printer, have fun. They will come with all kinds of printer problems. They're like, this patch is gonna solve that. It's not. But they let us into the building. Sometimes this isn't even possible, which means we have to apply for a job. And we have some CVs that will knock your socks off, right? 30 years of experience with the blockchain, whatever gets us in, right? And then you're inside the building and you say, look, my wife is pregnant, it's the doctor. Do you mind if I just stay in the meeting room for 5 minutes? And they leave you. And then you plug in the computers that you brought. And then you call your colleague saying, did we get in? He said, yep, we have persistent access because the little boxy thingy connects out to the network and then climbs back in, and we're in. It was a job interview. Very, very awkward job interview because you're trying not to get hired, right? So they brought you in, but you're trying not to get hired. So that also means social media. And this guy made a great screenshot of his new workstation. It's fantastic, but now you're showing me all the applications that you use the most, which allows me to target you. So watch out what you put on social media. That means phishing. Why do we still get phishing emails? Because they work. Simple as that. And no, you know, maybe not the stupid ones with the Nigerian princes and all that, but you will click on my phishing email. Why? Because maybe I determined that you're all running Outlook. Maybe I know that you have one of these pop-up notifications on, you know, when you're sitting in a meeting, you're presenting your new stuff to your colleagues. You see the pop-up coming up saying mail from na-na-na, right? Yeah. I'm gonna send you this. Thank you so much for subscribing to the adult content newsletter. If you did not sign up for this, please click this link, which doesn't go there, obviously, it goes to my server with a really nasty captcha to solve, and you're not gonna get it. And why, by the time you've solved the third attempt at my captcha, my code has finished running, and we're done. This hits people emotionally. You've never seen someone in a corporate banking environment click an unsubscribe link that fast, because they don't want this, right? Even though someone else signed them up, it works. How about you get a LinkedIn update? Sorry to inform you, you've been removed from the company name group following a complaint. You have 24 hours to rebut the complaint by clicking here. Everyone clicks the link, even though their LinkedIn might not be even associated with their company email address, which it shouldn't. People click. It's emotion. And we have ways of writing those emails. Simple as that. Again, every single interaction we are allowed to use. That means the mail. Show of hands if you have an internal mail office in your company or organization. What? Fantastic. Because we are going to call up all the numbers of your company. And if your voicemail says, hi, I'm traveling Australia right now and I won't be back until 2050, that's the person you want to target. Because we are going to send that person a package. And if you don't have an internal mail service, where is that package going to be? On his and her or hers desk. And where's all the gossip? Where do you hear people talking? Around the desks. Because we're all Google, we all want to have open offices, which means in that box is a phone, and we're listening. Because that phone has a mobile app on it that you can just get from the App Store. And we have turned on that phone, we are listening in. And that mobile app has a really cool feature. If the application sees light or any kind of movement through the camera, it puts the Android phone back into factory settings. So while you are unwrapping your box, light comes through, and by the time you have the phone in your hand, it's already factory reset, you have a clean phone. Courtesy of us. You gave us the company, but you know, here's your phone, right? What can we use that for? Well, any kind of content, internal project names, gossip, whatever we can use for phishing. Hello, HR. We're here for talking about a complaint that was filed against John. Do you know John? Yes, I know John. Okay, maybe we should talk. But don't tell it to me because that might be recorded. I'm going to send you an email with a link to click. Maybe you could put in your response in there, your input, anonymously, and we can handle this case. It's going to work. How about hacking from the street? Because that's where the attacker is, right? Because we look at all the wireless emissions coming from a building. That could be Wi-Fi, They could be Bluetooth, they could be Zigbee, they could be your air conditioning systems talking to each other. That could be the access control system, the CCTV, but that's also input devices. And 2 years ago, an attack came out called the mouse jack attack, because, you know, we're all mentally retarded. We all have to have logos and websites for all the bugs that come out, or they won't get the necessary attention. So the mouse jack attack. That means that a whole range of mice and keyboards were vulnerable to a certain attack where Logitech, and I think Microsoft as well, made their own protocol, which we think was on a Friday afternoon or a Monday morning, because, you know, it's horribly vulnerable. Because that mouse and that keyboard talks to the little dongle thingy. And if that keyboard and mouse can talk to it, then I can talk to it too, from the street. Because for the little dongle, as you noticed, there's only one. So I can inject keystrokes by transmitting them to that dongle, and the computer is going to think it's the mouse. So to demonstrate that, I brought one of these, and I'm actually using a mouse right now. Let's see if this works. And I'm going to close this. Where we get a little bit of chaos, but it's fine. Yep, there we go. I have the mouse here, I have the dongle over here. I have my trusted pocket chip computer, which is my favorite kind of choice of computer. You can use any computer really, but I like this because, yeah, it can fit in my pocket. This little thingy is capable of talking to that dongle that's in my laptop, which means if this goes right, and that's always the thing with hacker demos, right, especially in a hotel, because this thing already detected this dongle right there. It also detected four other dongles somewhere in the building that I don't know who owns them. So there's that. So I'm just beaming it to this one, and hopefully that will work. So if I inject the keystrokes, this thing, let's try it again. So you can imagine that if I can type anything on your computer, I can also make it type out a small program. And if I can make it type out a small program, I could also make it run that program, for example, as a backdoor. Yep, there we go. Let's see if this has more success. Oh, I'm not sending it to the other guy now. No, all right. I only got four of them, which is good. Not really, but. Has anyone read about this attack or ran frantically through the office going, we don't have,
well, yeah,
you know, maybe we shouldn't have these keyboards? Yeah, all right. Three times a charm. There we go. Okay, one keystroke. That's all I'm getting. Right, all right. There's too much interference, it seems, so sorry about that. But what you could use it for example, what if you use this to drive around the city and then make it type out what it was supposed to type out, which is just to start a browser. And that browser goes to your website, so you can see the IP address. And if any of those IP addresses are actually interesting, you can maybe pay them a visit and go back, which I think would be pretty disastrous. I live in Copenhagen, and we went driving through Copenhagen with this. Let's just say that the results were interesting. So sorry for not being able to demonstrate that here, but I didn't really think there would be so many devices. Now you might say, you know, Tom, we have pretty good control over this, because we know exactly what keyboard and mice were we're using, well, guess what? Ding dong, we're going to send you some. Yeah, but hold on, aren't we introducing a security hole in the company? Yes, we are. But these models that we have, we can turn those off remotely. It's not very hard. You write the wrong firmware to it and you basically brick them. So that's what we do for companies. Also, there's an option with them that produces a very high-pitched tone that only certain radios can detect. So that way we can still know if one of them is in the building. So we do coordinate these things with our customers. That means Wi-Fi. Right now, all your phones are telling me where you live and where you work. And there's these websites called wiggle.net. This is the hotel where we are right now, and it's the amount of access points in the neighborhood throughout the last few, you know, years. So, of course, in certain business areas, there will be a lot less. But that way, you can already see people's names sometimes, the infrastructure they're using, and stuff like that. And your phones are telling me two kinds of things. Which public Wi-Fi access points you want to connect to, and the ones that have a password. Now, some are open, like public Wi-Fi, airports, and all that, which means I can copy those, and I can set those up on my own so that your phone or your computer connects to me. This is kind of a known attack. But what about the ones where there's a password? I cannot clone the access point for which I know the password because, you know, I don't know the password, so it would be kind of stupid to do it. So for example, for Starbucks or for restaurants or for hotels, hostels, you can download these little programs that will tell you the wireless passwords in the neighborhood. These programs are complete spyware, so watch out with them, because all of a sudden they want your contacts and they want all kinds of other stuff. But what we do is just to buy all of them, extract all the passwords, and then when we see that your phone wants the one for Starbucks, well, we just generate on the fly an access point, set the password to the one that we found in the public app, and hopefully that way you connect to us. And if you have one app in your list of apps that is not using encryption, then we could do some interesting things with that. But how do we get close? Because, you know, the thing of sitting in your car with the antenna sticking out, people are going to notice. So we use one of these attacker wireless access points with a battery that gives you about 7 hours of attacks. But you still need to be able to get close to the building. So how would you get your wireless infrastructure close enough to the building in a way that you don't get detected? You could stand there all day with a backpack. It's going to be a little bit awkward. I'll show you one of these Wi-Fi attacks in progress. It's almost as exciting as an above sea view of the most epic submarine battle, right? Because there's a lot of stuff going on wirelessly. Let's enhance, you know. It's actually in that bicycle bag. We just take a bicycle basket, there's a double bottom in it, we stick our stuff in there, we park the bike in the bike shed or close enough to the building, we have remote access with a 3G dongle to that thing, and we can see your wireless traffic from our offices. Simple as that. The only thing you need to do, of course, is to make sure the bike doesn't get stolen. But it's a lot easier to do than trying to pretend to be normal and walking around the office for 7 hours. That also means that, for example, for this hotel, this was some stuff that I made an hour ago, the bankside access point, one of these is mine. So we have the access point and the actual wireless client connected to it. One of these on the left is mine, and you're not going to know which one. I didn't allow anyone to associate because I'm not an idiot, but that's the technique. And Wi-Fi hacking will always work. Again, one of your programs will use HTTP. And I can use a nifty little program to inject a nice prompt for you. Yeah. On the left, the real iTunes pop-up. On the right, mine. Good luck. And I'm going to get your password. And I'm going to be able to do some pretty dangerous and nice things with it. For example, accessing your iCloud backups. If that company, of course, is based on iCloud. Because if not, this has no use to us. We're not interested in people's Facebooks, Gmails, whatever it is. We just want to get to the target. We sometimes get requests saying, like, can you do a red team on me? Like, yeah, with all respect, we're not interested in you. We want to get to the target. Just like a gang would. Because that's the objective. So, breaching the premises. How do we get in the building? As I told you, sometimes, if there's no other option, we're allowed to break a window, but we've only done that a few times. Also, the response is hilarious, because when you break a window, you can do it in two ways, really amateuristically, which is just throwing a hammer through it, and then putting a ball, like from a children's shop, and putting the ball in there, and then reading the tickets later on, going, yeah, some kid threw their ball through our window, and they didn't. Or you can do it really professionally, like the burglars do, which means you take three rolls of duct tape, and you make little, you know, strips of duct tape, and you elbow the window, and you just take the window out and put it against the wall. Enough, no one has to get hurt, there's no noise, nothing. But then they're gonna know it's a job, of course. And we get into most buildings with a can of compressed air. Again, this is not new. This has been out for quite a while. But most buildings have motion sensors, which means if you come from the outside, you want to walk in, there's no motion sensor or it won't trigger. If you walk from the inside out towards the parking lot, the motion sensor sees you and opens the doors for you. So me as an attacker trying to get into the building, I have to somehow trigger that motion sensor. So, how do we do this? That's me, it helps to be tall. You stick the little straw through the window, or through the two thing in the door, and you spray the motion sensor, and the door opens for you. And that's it. These are the embarrassingly low-tech attacks. And then we tell the bank or the thing, so now what else do you got? Because most companies are still compensating for the fact that they have flat networks. So what you want is access control. By the way, does that mean you have to remove all motion detection sensors? No. But maybe some. Maybe some should be a button, a physical button that you have to press. And hopefully you don't allow any kind of free access, because if the button is right there, I'm going to bring my BB gun. And I can shoot the button, which we've done as well, and then the door opens. Whatever it takes. But sometimes people cut corners, and then you get these kinds of situations. Access control, all of you must have one of these key fobs, key cards, whatever it is. And of course, we have to clone those. And we know for our Operation Money Grab, the company is using access cards. It needs a PIN, but no PIN required on the exit, which means we have to clone access cards. And with that, I have taken up some kind of a hobby, which that I like to photograph people's access cards when they are still wearing them outside the company. That means public transportation, that means at parties, bars, whatever it is. So if you go to Twitter and you look up the hashtag protect your access cards, you will find my Twitter profile with a lot of pictures of people's crotches, basically. So don't do this. Why do I do this? Well, I kind of like to strike up a conversation with the person saying, do you understand that you have a key on your trousers, that you can lose this, that someone can clone this, that they can see where you work, and thus maybe, you know, you're a more high valuable target for your, you know, bag being stolen or whatever it is. Because companies have to understand that their security policy ends at the door. You cannot enforce this. So that's why we're doing this awareness campaign.
But where is the difference when I use my key card out of my pocket or inside my pocket?
Because a jerk like me can't see it and try to get to it. Or a vandal or someone trying to do harm to the actual company. I was going to say, some of you are in the room who made media attention about that. But the difference is that you don't want to put the cat next to the milk. Which means if it's inside your pocket, you have less chance of losing it, and you have less chance of a guy like me trying to clone it. That is why. So keep it out of sight, put it away, because you're going to lose it. That already causes hassle. So you're trying to minimize the risk, or lower the risk. As said, this got a little bit of press in different countries, which is, of course, what we want.
I wrote that.
I know you did. So thanks for that. But you might say, look, I have something with the key card that is made specifically not to have it cloned. I have a PIN. and it's good, but then we're going to buy one of these. It's a camera. Looks like a motion sensor. It's a camera. That's a little bit tedious, because now we have to link who you are with when you came in and all that. We're going to buy one of these. It's a little module you can attach to your phone, and you can actually see the heat signatures to see if your summer house has been insulated the correct way, and you can save on your energy bill. But we use it to look at the heat residue on the keypad of your fingers, so we can figure out what your code is. And this works every time. And this we learned from the credit card criminals, who stand behind you in the shop, you type in your PIN, they see the PIN, they call up their friend around the corner saying, yeah, woman with the black bag, hit her on the head, we have a PIN. We use it to get into confidence. It also means that we can use it to see, is it a real camera or a fake one? Is it on? Yeah, it's on because it's producing heat. If you go back to our Operation Money Grab, they also had CCTV cameras. I don't think you have to be a mastermind to figure out how to disable those. This is compliance for you. This is not security. And that's kind of where companies like to cut corners. So now we get in, and there's a computer. We'd like to take the computer with us. The problem is it's locked. How do we get past this? Other than bringing huge bolt cutters? No, the ultimate of ultimate cyber weapons, a toilet roll. If you look on YouTube, you cut that in half, you roll it up, you stick it in, you turn, and most of them will open. And you're not going to detect it. Now, let's say I want to get into the computer. It's locked. Well, your computer has ports, right? Several of them. You might even have one of these PCI Express ports still exposed. You might have other things exposed, which means if you do, we can put in a slot that is connected to a different computer. And because the actual interface has what's called DMA, direct memory access, using an interface, using my attacker computer, I can write wherever I want in memory. And I can write to the one condition that says computer is locked. And I change that, I press enter, I don't need your password. I just change the actual value of memory saying you're not locked anymore, it's fine. Does that work on your computer? Did you ever test it? But you might say, look, we turned that off. That's great. Do you have any idea what I can do with this? Yeah, I turn off all the interfaces. That's fantastic. We go to eBay, we find the docking station, put the laptop on the docking station, and hey, the ports are back. There's even undocumented pins on these kinds of things that we're trying to figure out to see what the manufacturers actually intended with these, so we can use them. And even if you don't have that, then you sure have one of these, which is how your Wi-Fi chip communicates with the rest of your computer. We take it out, we put ours in, and now again we're in the memory where we can write and read. And the software won't even see it most of the time. And that's pretty bad. So now we actually get past that, and now we come to the end of the mission. I'm almost out of time, which is you need to provide a fingerprint for transactions above 5,000. That's why the customer was smiling. That means the customer has one of these. A fingerprint reader, which cannot be bypassed, right? Fingerprints, unique. Your fingerprint is your username. It is not your password. You can change your password. You can change your fingerprints, it's gonna hurt, but you can change them. You don't know when you lost your key, but you do know it. You know when you lost your key, but you don't know it when you lost your fingerprints, right? So it's your username, not your password. For this software, as part of what's called, you know, 4i principle, you need to be able to give a fingerprint and then verify the claim that, you know, you were the one signing off on the thing. So again, how do we bypass fingerprint readers? I already told you, the ultimate cyber weapon. Exactly, toilet paper. Because, again, spoiler alert, people don't always wash their hands. And there's residue of oil and fat on your fingers. And with that, we can lift the print off that from your mouse, from your keyboard, from a glass. A glass is the easiest. The lifting of the print is the hard part. If you go to any toy store, there'll be little detective sets that you can buy. We use printer cartridge dust to be able to dust it on, and then using scotch tape usually. It's pretty easy to get off. So I have one of these here, and I have a small calibration program here as well. I'm not sure if I need to magnify that or not. Just to show you how we can defeat this. That connected, all right. I have it right here. I'm going to enroll myself as ID 1. I'm gonna put my finger on there. Subject 1 is enrolled. No pictures of my fingerprints. Thank you very much. Identify. I'm going to try that again. And it says, identified. Fantastic. Let's try that again. Identify my other finger. It says not identified. It's not the right finger. Right? We lift the print. We inverse it. We print it out on paper with a normal inkjet printer. And here comes the more disgusting part of the presentation, at least for me. Yep. And we're verified. So we beat this with a piece of paper. Now you might say, well, not my fingerprint readers at work. Really? Are you sure about that? And can we please see the report where you last tested that? This is usually where we get the awkward pause in the meeting. So now we're successful, we're in, customer's happy, they fix a lot of stuff, we come back, we do even worse attacks until they can actually detect real attacks themselves. Sometimes during a job, they call us saying, ha, your attack from Italy? We saw it, we're like, yeah, that's not us. Which means it works, right? Which means we're teaching them where to look, and that's important. Let's just talk defense. Try to minimize your digital footprint. That means, do you really need to have all your job vacancies on your website indexable by Google? Because that's the first thing that we go for when we want to find out what technology your company is using. Do you really want to share your birth date and all kinds of other stuff for C-level staff on LinkedIn, on your company pages? You want to make a big thing out of the CEO's birthday today. That's great. Thank you so much, because now we're going to have his birthday. And yes, people need to work, but still, to try to keep that at bay. When it comes to wireless emissions, make sure that you know exactly what hardware you have. I'm sorry I couldn't demonstrate the attack here, but if there's so many of them in the building, it's kind of hard, it seems. So if you have one of these, this is public information, by the way, this is an attack that's 2 years old. If you have one of these, then yes, you're vulnerable to this. So again, companies, we are helping companies scan their infrastructure and offices to make sure they don't have one of these. And to make sure they have very strict procurement rules when it comes to buying new hardware and what is allowed. If they want to have a new keyboard procured, that they have a technical testing partner like ourselves to make sure that the hardware is actually following the rules. An internal post office, maybe, to make sure that post packages are not lingering around and are not on your desk, because you never know what's in them. Wi-Fi is still a problem, because you have the choice between two evils. One is that you have a guest password that everyone knows, that everyone has to share, including the guy that's going to leave tomorrow, because it will become a public secret. Or you have one of these captive portals that I can clone using my phishing gear. But then where you log on with your credentials, and then you have wireless, but it's not encrypted. You can use your VPN, all that, but again, you give me the potential to phish. But on the other hand, now you have a way to manage the access towards your wireless infrastructure. So you need to have monitoring to make sure that these kinds of things are not possible. And even then, there's still a risk. Don't wear your access cards in public, especially not on public transportation in Copenhagen, because I will find you and I will photograph you and I will put you on Twitter. That's after the little awkward conversation that we're going to have, which is usually me saying, by the way, do you know that, you know, packages we talked about, same thing for phones. We once sent a backdoored keyboard to a company, to an IT department, and the IT department could not agree on who should have the keyboard, so they all had it every day. Every day they changed the keyboard, So we effectively backdoored the whole IT department. We had to do nothing. It happens. And we're not the only ones. All kinds of other companies have backdoor hardware and just send it. Right? In the summer, a little fan, so you keep cool. Of course, it has to install a driver, but just ignore that. Just the text that comes up, you know, just ignore that. So it's a driver. And during the holidays, of course, a little Christmas tree. Same thing, has to install a driver, which actually just installs a backdoor. For your PIN, not your PIN number, the N stands for number, user awareness. If someone is really getting close to you, you just offer that person to authenticate to the system first. And if they say, I have to go, yeah, you probably weren't supposed to be with them. So make sure that you are aware of your surroundings so this doesn't happen. And when it comes to physical security, again, it doesn't mean you have to remove all those systems. But are those systems protecting what they're supposed to protect? You should have more of a story when someone is allowed to click an email attachment in your company. Someone is allowed to gain access to your building. The entire ecosystem of your security should not just rely on those two things happening. Simple as that. And when it comes to computer security, well, make sure you have policies in place. Make sure that, I'll give you another example, if the cleaning crew at 3 a.m. during the night plugs in a USB stick somewhere in your network, you should be able to know about it. If you don't, then maybe you should look at some of our demos for today and tomorrow. Because that's important. You have the data, but you're not acting upon it. And we want to help companies to act upon that data so they make the right decisions. So all of this, all these techniques can kind of be compared like getting hit in the face with a pillow. It's the same techniques, but none of the evil or nasty aftermath. And that way, we teach companies how to think and act like attackers. We security consultants always get this reputation of always saying no. And we do say no to a lot of things. People need to work. And to find that sweet spot, that's where we come. Thank you so much.
Og så vil jeg godt sige tak, fordi du lyttede med. Tech-test er optaget live on tape. Jeg hedder Lars Benetzen, og husk, at du kan besøge os på tech-test.dk samt følge os på både Twitter, Facebook og YouTube.